I spoke last week about the fellowship that we have in Jesus. What a fellowship it is indeed. What manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us that we should be called children of God, the creator of all that is, the all-powerful and all-loving God in heaven, made it possible for us not only to be called, but to be children of God. And thus, that is a great fellowship indeed. And we talked a little bit about the passive aspects of fellowship, a relationship characterized by sharing in common. I pointed out we share these things because God has condescended to share these things with us, and thus those with whom he shares these things, and they share them with one another. But it is a passive sharing because God is the only one who is active in that. We have no say regarding those with whom we share these things. We simply have fellowship and participation in the various blessings of God because he shares them with us, and we enter into that fellowship and of course share them with others. But then there's also the active sense of koinonia, or fellowship, as giving so that others can share. And here we have the sense of generosity, fellow feeling, willing contribution, gift. This is what we do in participation with other people, separate apart from the things that we share simply because we've entered into the fellowship of God. And so having entered into the fellowship with God, there are things he shares with us and with others, and things he shares the same things with others that he shares with us, and there is a commonality in those things that we mentioned last Sunday morning. But here we're talking about an active sense of participation, an active sense of the word fellowship. The active sense of the word has to do with giving of ourselves, our time, our money, and our abilities, and the practical aspects of Christian discipleship. And so the fact that we do have the fellowship that we mentioned last week, and we share in all these things because God has condescended to share those things with us, that's all good. But there is more. There is that which we can contribute to that fellowship, that which you can contribute in, and I can contribute, and we actually contribute these things to one another, and have an active fellowship here on the local level that we do not have with other people. Now, we have the passive fellowship that we talked about last Sunday morning with all others of God's children, wherever they may be. But active fellowship is limited to the local congregation, or perhaps when we visit other congregations, we participate in activities that they make possible for us to participate in because of the time, such as the gospel meetings and things of that nature. But for the most part, we're talking about the local congregation. In this active sense of the word, we do have a say regarding those with whom we have fellowship. And so we may participate with other people. We may contribute or give of ourselves, our time, our money, and our abilities with some, but then we may not give of ourselves, our time, our money, and our abilities with certain others. There are limitations involved here, decisions that we have to make regarding those with whom we fellowship in this active sense. That is, we have to make decisions concerning those to whom we will give of ourselves, our time, our money, and our abilities. Well, what are the things that we do, and I think five of them listed here, things that we do in participation with one another, things that we give. I've already mentioned those in passing. We're going to look at these in turn. The things that we do as active aspects of this fellowship. First of all, we give of ourselves. We are to give of ourselves, whether we do or not. Maybe that's another question. But we are to give of ourselves. Over in 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 5, the Apostle Paul wrote, "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in the great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear record, bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints." And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us, by the will of God. Here, they shared not only their ability, which we're talking about in a moment, but they went beyond their ability. These Macedonians, they dug deep. Now again, what Paul has done here, he's writing to the Corinthian church, and among other things, he is encouraging them to follow through on their commitment to help the poor saints in Jerusalem. But as he's biding his time, he's taking his time and getting back to Corinth because he wants to make sure that they have straightened out all the problems he wrote to them about the first Christians. So instead of going straight to Corinth from Ephesus, he goes up to Macedonia first. And he uses the example of the Corinthians to inspire and encourage the Macedonians. And the Macedonians give first themselves to the Lord, and then to the apostles and others with him by the will of God. And so they had a gift for the poor saints in Jerusalem. And they dug deep to come up with the funds that they were contributing to the poor saints in Jerusalem. Even beyond their ability, they not only met but exceeded Paul's expectations also in this regard. And now he's using that to stir up the Corinthians to follow through on their commitment. And so it's a fellowship, it's a ministry to the saints. Now, the Corinthians, or the Macedonian saints, rather, they did not worship with the Jewish saints in Jerusalem. But here they had a responsibility and an obligation to help them out. And they took that responsibility and obligation seriously. And so though they were not worshiping together, they did have this particular fellowship with them, and that they did deed, they raised this money, and they were, had the big call. They were imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift. And so, apparently there was some reluctance on the part of Paul that, well, you know, y'all really can't afford this. No, take it, we'll be honest. Why? Because first they gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us by the will of God. And so that was the key here. The Macedonians, when they had entered into the fellowship of the Lord Jesus Christ, they were in it all the way. They not only wanted to share in the spiritual things that God made it possible for them to share in, they wanted the saints in Jerusalem to share in what they had. The saints in Jerusalem were in need. They were in poverty. And I don't know, nobody knows really what caused it. But it was a long-standing need. And keep in mind that when Paul gets back to Jerusalem in Acts chapter 21, as far as Luke's record is concerned, thousands of Christians in that congregation. And keep in mind that in the infancy of that congregation, they had sold those who lived there, they had sold all their goods and possessions and parted the money to those who had it. They had helped out the Jews and Jewish proselytes that had come to Jerusalem for Pentecost and had become Christians while there. Their money played out because they stayed longer than they would have ordinarily stayed because they become Christians. They want to learn more about the way of Christ. They want to learn more about New Testament worship, New Testament responsibilities and obligations. So they stayed longer than they had planned to stay. Their supply ran out, so the brethren in Jerusalem sold their goods. And so by the time of this particular situation, they don't have any goods to sell. They don't have any property to sell. They sold that years ago in helping the saints that were there from all over the Roman Empire. And they're very in need. And so the Macedonians say, here, Paul, say, we can get by with that. So that first they gave themselves. In Romans chapter 12, this is what Paul later, because he doesn't write Romans until he gets down to Corinth after having written 2 Corinthians. And from Corinth, he writes to the Romans, and he says, among other things, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercy of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We have a responsibility and obligation not only to give ourselves, but to present our bodies a living sacrifice. To spend and be spent, basically, for others who are for Christ, but also for others who are in Christ. Which is totally reasonable that we should do this. Look at what Jesus did for us. And what the Father did for us in sending Jesus to do that. You know, we were conformed to this world before we became Christians. And there was a transformation that took place in that very time here in which we were learning the gospel. It had an effect on us even before we obeyed it, because it led to our obedience to it. And then we began to transform. But then there were some in Rome who were apparently either had or were in danger of being conformed to this world again. And so he said, don't. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will God. And that's what I think he's talking about when he says regarding the Christians, they had first given themselves to the Lord and then to us. And if you're willing to give yourself to the Lord, what would you not give to the Lord and to the Lord's people, wherever they may be. Secondly, we are to give of our time. Now, primarily, we're talking again about the local congregation and its function and operations, but it wouldn't be limited to that. But that's our primary concern as far as active fellowship is concerned, is the local congregation of which we are part. In Acts 2, verse 41 and 42, then those that gladly received his word, that is the word of Peter, were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them, or added together, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, in the breaking of bread, and in prayers. So here was an active something. Oh, yes, they are the baptized into Christ, and already begun to share in those things that we mentioned last Sunday morning. But then there is more than that. There is an active participation. There is a continuing steadfastness. There is a repeated thing here. There are meetings, successive meetings, together of these Christians as they continue steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship. That means that they were there on a regular basis and on a repeated basis hearing the teaching of the apostles. And fellowshipping, and fellowship here probably refers, and again the word tends to be translated sharing, and is so translated in other places, and we'll notice during later parts of the lesson. And so sharing, it could be referring to a contribution. It was a separate, distinct act of worship from the teaching and the breaking of bread and in prayer. No indication that they were singing this early, but later, of course, singing was added to the worship by others. Inspiration, Ephesians chapter 5 and Colossians chapter 3. And that certainly is an act of worship that we give, that we contribute our voices there when we sing. But whatever else is involved here, certainly time is involved. It took time to get out of your home. It took time to get to the place of meeting. It took time to worship there with them. And keep in mind, this is very early in the church. They don't have New Testaments to study at home. And so their only source, really, of divine information is the apostles. And so they've got to spend a lot of time, and they do spend a lot of time, together with the apostles, hearing more and more about Jesus Christ and about what he did for them and about what he expects of them. And so they contribute time to that. Over in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 and 25, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. This day here is probably the day of the destruction of Jerusalem, which was coming. We, of course, are on the other side of that particular day, but we know that one of these days the Lord's going to come. Oh, I don't know that we're not going to see it coming, but we'll see it occur. And we know that day is drawing near, relatively speaking, is nearer now than it was in the first century. We're to consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. Not forsaking the some of ourselves together as a matter of something, but exhorting one another. Well, you know, it takes time. We contribute our time. We spend time together exhorting one another. We exhort one another in a song, in the spiritual song. We exhort one another in the Bible class. We exhort, well, somebody exhorts when they're preaching being done. One person exhorts and everybody else is exhorted. But then I'm exhorted too by your verbal responses to the lesson afterwards. Sometimes I get more than at other times, but that's alright. When I don't get that many responses, I figure, well, I really said something they needed to hear, and they're just mulling it over a while before they say anything. But we are to contribute our time, and it takes time, to come together in the local assembly. We're not to forsake the assembly of ourselves together. We are to give of our time and to be a part of that assembly so that we can then give these other things that we're going to mention. We're to give of our money. I don't preach a lot about money. I haven't been since I've been here because I know times are tough. And, you know, I think everybody probably does about as good as they can where money is concerned here. But we don't want to forget this ever. Give of our money. In Acts 2 verses 44 and 45, now all who believed were together and had all things in common and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. That was their attitude toward these personal possessions. They had them, but they weren't possessive of them. If there was needs on the part of other people, then they sold what they had that they didn't need so much. You know, sometimes you can have property that you don't really need, and I'm not saying that you don't have a right to that property. I'm not one of those that says, yeah, the government has the right to take everything you got because somebody else don't have nothing. But you have a right to, yes, to possess property as much as you want. You've got a right to have as much money in the bank as you want. But you also have a right and obligation to other people. We all do. And so they have this responsibility and obligation and stuff that came in. After all, like the Macedonians, they apparently had first given themselves to the Lord. And it was very easy then for them to sell their property, their possessions, and their goods, probably non-necessities, and divide them among all as anyone had need. And so they were willing to give of their money. They had these things in common because of their attitude. In 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, Paul gives the Corinthians a command. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders, that command to the church of Galatia, so you must do also. This is not a matter of option. It's not an optional matter. So you must do also. Here is a command he's about to issue. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by something and aside, or lay something aside, store enough that he may prosper, that there be no collections. He's not talking about putting something in a sock, or putting something under your mattress, or putting something in a tin can and bury it in your yard. He's talking about laying it aside in the treasury. As a matter of fact, the word storing up here is from the same word as the thesaurus, which basically is where we get the word treasury. And so we are to treasure these things up. We are to prepare for our responsibilities and obligations as a congregation by each member contributing what he can to the work of the local church. And in particular, he's got the work of benevolence in mind, but this is the only place the church can get any funds at all from which to operate. We don't have any business with spaghetti suppers. We don't have any business with bake sales. We don't have any business with raffles. No, none of those. Bingo part, no. Not all playing bingo, don't get me wrong. But the church has no business sponsoring a bingo party to raise money for any part of this work. Or for any part of the work that it doesn't really have, but that it takes upon itself. We don't even have the right to take upon ourselves any work that God has upon the right. And so the money must be raised by first of which contributions, and everybody is obligated to give as he may prosper. What about those days you don't prosper? Well, you didn't prosper, you're not obligated. That's what it is, that it does have that limitation. But as you may prosper, when you prosper more, then of course God will expect more of you. And you should expect more of yourself. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 10, the Apostle Paul says, now, may he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness while you are enriched in everything for all liberality which causes thanksgiving through us to God. What's he talking about? He's talking about the Corinthians' commitment to help the poor saints in Jerusalem. He's saying, all right, if you follow through, which I'm confident you will do. He's already said that pretty much. He said, God will multiply and multiply the seed. He's talking about spiritual seed here. He's not talking about physical seed. Because as they do this, they will be sowing to the Spirit, as Paul mentioned in Galatians chapter 6. Sow to the Spirit, you will of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So you will supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. That contribution will be a fruit of their righteousness. While you are enriched in everything for all liberality, which causes thanksgiving to God. And so what he's saying is, yes, your contribution to the poor saints in Jerusalem will accomplish more than that. He goes on to say in verse 12, for the administration of this servant not only supplies the needs of the saints, it does that, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God, while through the proof of this ministry, they glorify God through the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ and for your liberal sharing with them and all men, and by their prayer for you, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Now remember, he starts out 2 Corinthians chapter 8 talking about the grace of God bestowed upon the church of Macedonia. Now he's talking about the indescribable gift of God to the Corinthians because he has enabled them to do the same thing, to follow through on their commitment to help the poor saints in Jerusalem. That is a gift of God for the Corinthians. And so they are about to have the grace of God bestowed upon them when they follow through on that commitment and liberally share. The word sharing here is the same word koinonia for fellowship, and it's talking about sharing what they have of a material nature with the Corinthians. Now when he wrote to Romans, and I didn't include this, but I probably should have, in Romans chapter 15 he mentions this, and he mentions to the Romans that the Corinthians and the Macedonians really had an obligation to the saints in Jerusalem because where did the gospel go out from? The gospel went out from Jerusalem. The first saints were Jewish saints. And so the Gentile churches had a responsibility and obligation to help the Jewish saints in Jerusalem because that's where the gospel had started. And so we benefited, he's saying, from their spiritual things, and so it's only natural that they should benefit from our material things. And so there was that obligation, you see, and they were willing to follow through on that obligation. So those are things we do. We give of ourselves, we give of our time, we give of our money. Those are acts of fellowship when we give those things or share those things with others. But also we give of our abilities. Each of us has abilities that can be pooled with the abilities of other saints in the congregation so that the congregation can function collectively in the work that God has given it to do. In Ephesians 4 verse 11, talking immediately about miraculous things, but certainly it would apply where there are no miraculous but only natural gifts. And he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Now, to some extent, that was accomplished in the first century. It was accomplished by AD 70. I believe all the New Testament documents were written by AD 70, and that they had the totality of the faith. But until that time, there was the partial revelations, there were the partial tongue speakings that Paul mentioned in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the partial revelations, partial prophecies. But all these parts came together and formed a complete unit. And what he's saying is these miraculous gifts were for the equipment of the saints that they could do the work of ministry, that the body of Christ might be built up, and that they might come to the unity of the faith, of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, That would be not a literal man, but a body of people that would have the complete truth. But he goes on to say in verse 14 that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. But speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself. And love. This goes beyond the period of miraculous gifts. Even in the first century, when only some people had miraculous gifts, those who didn't have miraculous gifts, they still had responsibilities and obligations to take part in the edification process. Even now, it's possible for children of God to be tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and cunning craftiness and deceitful plotting. But in every church, those who are capable should be speaking the truth in love, so the congregation and its members can grow up in all things into him who is the head. There is an edification process that still goes on today, and we still use what the apostles and prophets provided, that being the New Testament. That's all we really need right here. But it needs to be practically applied. And so every individual member of the local congregation has some responsibility and obligation to make application of it, not only in his own life, but in the life of the congregation as well. And so the congregation functions by its members functioning. In 1 Corinthians 12, Paul mentions this more particularly, beginning of verse 15, if the foot should say, because I am not of the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them in the body, just as he pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? He's talking about people who might feel like, well, you know, I don't have anything to offer. Well, yeah, you do. Everybody has something to offer. Now, again, in the first century, spiritual gifts played a big part in that. But we no longer have the spiritual gifts, the miraculous spiritual gifts. But we have natural gifts. We have natural abilities that sometimes we too easily overlook. Not everybody has the ability to stand up in a pulpit and put two or three sentences together, much less three or four paragraphs, or a page, or 10 pages. Of dialogue. But, and not everybody's able to teach a class for him. I understand that. But everybody at least has the ability to be a good example, and probably most of us have more ability than that. What he's saying, just because you're not a public speaker, that doesn't mean you're not a part of the body. Just because you're not a Bible teacher doesn't mean you're not a part of the body. We're all parts of the body. He goes on to say in verse 20, but now indeed there are many members yet one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather, those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. Every part of the body has its proper functioning and is necessary to the total functioning of the body. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable on these who bestow greater honor. And our unpresentable part has greater modesty, but our presentable parts have no need. But God composed the body, has given greater honor to that part which lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. Your eyelashes have no capacity to see, but they're there to protect your eyeballs. Your hands are there to grab your side if you have a pain in your side. And other than, your body works together, in other words. And each of your body members helps the other body members. Each body part contributes to the functioning of the body as a whole. And that's what it should be in a local congregation. Everybody has abilities that they can contribute to the overall working of the local church. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now you are the body of Christ and members individually. So that's what fellowship is all about as far as active is concerned. We are each one to give of ourselves, to give of our time, to give of our money, and to give of our abilities that the local church might function as it was designed to function. No one is completely indispensable. But there's a difference between not being indispensable and not being needed. We're all needed.